I'm in a position to know, because the Patrick Henry Society has studied the whole thing. The real problem, whether you like it or not, is whether you're going to sit back and let desegregation spread throughout the entire South. And it's an indisputable fact that there could be no other result. The Negroes will literally, and I do mean literally, control the South. The vote will be theirs. You'll have black mayors and black policemen the way they do in Chicago and New York already. Like is not a black governor and black doctors to deliver your babies. If they find time, that is. And that's the way it'll be. Did you ever stop to think about that? When you let those 10 enter your school, did you?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the main event.
Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is the Insurgent Radio Network, and this is Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger, right here in the bunker, right next to Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern and Steakhouse and Filling Station.
Did I say we're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581, or did I forget that? Hey, it is the 8th of June. Yeah, 8th of June, 2016. This month is moving right along, and I'm happy to introduce you and welcome you to the new thing, the second stage of... Yeah, we're about to fire off the second stage of our great program, the Chaos Factor. That's right. We've just gone through Chaos 1, or Chaos A. Now we're going to Chaos B. And this will cover between now and after the election's over in November. And... you're going to see a lot of activity with the Chaos Factor between now and then, which is our only weapon. We don't have many weapons here, but that's one weapon we have, and that is chaos. We support it. We promote it. We're loyal to it. Had quite a crowd gathered outside the bunker today in anticipation of Chaos Plan B. They're very happy with the results of Chaos Plan A. Worked perfectly. I couldn't ask for any better situation. Chaos Plan A has worked fantastically, and Trump is playing his selected role very well. And we appreciate that, Donald, even though you don't necessarily realize that you're cooperating with the Chaos Factor. You are, baby. One thing that's funny about these people, none of these people know what a mestizo is. They keep saying, like Trump said, Mexican. Well, Mexico is a country. And that was real dumb to use the Mexican thing. Well... the reason they use the Mexican thing is if they use the correct thing, they'd probably be in more trouble because the judge is, I haven't seen his picture, but he's probably mestizo. And that's the only racial, it's a mixed race, sort of like a mulatto among the Mexicans. And it goes back to mestizo means a sheep of many colors of wool, which means mixed race. It's not a pure race, of course. It's a mixed race. So whenever you talk about these people, don't use the term Mexican, because there's a lot of whites in Mexico and blacks in Mexico and browns in Mexico and Asians in Mexico that are Mexican citizens. So they are not what you hear all the time as being Hispanic. Hispanic derives from the Iberian Peninsula of Spain, of Europe, which is Spain. And in Spain, you'll find different races, but you'll find a preponderance in northern Spain and some in southern Spain, blondes, redheads, brown eye, blue eye, and all that kind of stuff. In other words, Aryans. That's what a real Hispanic is. A real Hispanic is not a mestizo colored person. So if any of you guys will have Trump's ear, you may call him up on the phone and say, "Hey, bro, these are not Mexicans. I mean, they're Mexicans by nationality, but they're by race, they're mestizo." I haven't seen the picture of this judge who's supposedly born here in Indiana, but he's probably mestizo, but I'm sure we'll see a picture one of these days. But Trump, you got to get your thing straight when you talk about it. It'd be funny, though, if he did refer to him as a mestizo, because then they'd really go ape. Well, they're all yapping about it and jumping down his throat, but he belonged to La Raza, according to my information, the race united, La Raza Unida. And whenever you get a chance, you got to talk about that. If they're anti-racist, how come they support La Raza Unida, the race united, which is mainly the mestizo, sort of a Mexican or a Hispanic, no, not Hispanic, but a sort of like a mulatto race of people, but put together differently. So anyhow, I don't hear the right wing, hardly anybody in the racial right, referring to these people as mestizos. You know, I've tried to educate them over the years, but the right wing is almost uneducatable, because you give them the right stuff and they don't use it. They should be putting that La Raza Unida all over the place and telling people about it. I had one guy in California had a smart idea. He got La Raza Unida bumper stickers and put on his car, because he's saying the race united, but he means the white race. The white race united. Yeah, so there you go about that. A little bit of education for you.
See, with Andrea Mitchell, and during her interview with him, she constantly made the implication that Bernie Sanders should drop out, because she was talking about how Hillary Clinton is really facing two different battles. On one front, she's fighting against Bernie Sanders, who's still very much her opponent, and on the other side of the coin, she's also facing Donald Trump, who's now attacking her. So the underlying implication is Bernie Sanders, I mean, let's wrap it up now. I mean, Hillary Clinton's going to win, it's inevitable, so shouldn't you leave and exit the race? And basically, she tried to cultivate sympathy for Hillary Clinton, and Bernie Sanders shut her down hard. So we're going to watch the clip and then come back and discuss it. I have a lot to say about it, so enjoy.
But isn't the bottom line about you versus Hillary Clinton and who would be the stronger candidate that she is now fighting a war on two fronts? She's getting beaten up by Donald Trump on a daily basis. Aside from him calling you crazy Bernie in his tweet, he has been embracing you. He is building you up. He likes the fact that you're taking her down. So she's fighting Donald Trump. She's fighting Bernie Sanders.
One second. Andrea, no, I don't accept. Andrea, okay. I don't accept that proposition. Last I heard, Hillary Clinton is running for president of the United States. I am running for president of the United States. Trump is running for president of the United States. And what a candidate does is make his or her best case to the American people. I have gotten attacked and attacked and attacked. My record has been misinterpreted and lied about. The issue of this campaign is to go out to the American people. and talk about why the American people are working, are struggling. Hillary Clinton has got to make that case. Trump has got to make that case. Sanders has got to make that case. And that's what we intend to do. And I know, yeah, I'm sorry.
I'm just saying that Hillary Clinton's, the opposition to her, the negatives against her have been built up by Donald Trump just hammering away at her. And up until now, at least, he has not been going after you as much.
Hey,
she's fighting two candidates, and you're fighting one.
Oh, really? Oh, really? Andrea, in every state that we have won, in 19 states, we have had to take on the entire Democratic establishment. We've had to take on senators and governors and mayors and members of Congress. That's what we have taken on. So please do not moan to me about Hillary Clinton's problems. I'm in this race to win. We're taking on the Democratic establishment. We are standing up for working people, and we have a shot. It is a steep hill to climb, but we're going to fight for every last vote that we can get, every delegate that we can get, and that's what I intend to do in the next month, 5 weeks.
Well, I don't think I was moaning about Hillary Clinton's problems, but just to point out, let me play a little bit of Donald Trump on Morning Joe.
So she said she's fighting.
Boy, oh boy, the self-righteous media and the Jewish content of the media, they're absolutely unbelievable. They are despicable. I mean, Bernie's making some good points, but she is so intense. They have decided to coronate Hillary Clinton, and that's going to be. You're going to have her as a president, whether you like it or not, you fucking peasants. Andrea Mitchell, you can kiss my white ass and a whole lot of other white asses. But don't forget, Bernie Sanders is an important player in the chaos factor. Yep. He's just as important in this chaos factor program as Trump or any of the rest of them. Well, let's explore a little bit of a pessimist's guide to history. I like that stuff, man, I'll tell you. Yeah. 1874, fire aboard ship kills 468. The immigrant ship Kasperik caught fire and sank off Auckland, New Zealand on November 17th. All but five of those aboard died of fire or drowning. 1875, Garonne River flood. About 1,000 people were killed in France on June 22nd when the Garonne River overflowed, demolishing Verdun, Toulouse, and a number of villages. So you see, as far back as 1875, they had floods, and they didn't have global warming, man, but they had floods. 1876, Turkish massacre in Bulgaria. Mm-hmm. When the Bulgarians rebelled against their Turkish masters, overlords, the Turks responded in 1876 with a bloody repression that came to be called the Bulgarian Horrors. You know, Turkey's I'm telling you, Turkey's not very nice. And having him in NATO is really scary. Anyhow, with the bloody repression that came to be called the Bulgarian Horrors, Bulgarian town of Batak suffered one of the most infamous attacks in the hands of a group of ill-disciplined Turkish irregulars known as the Basha Bazooks. For the most part, there were only women and children in Batak when the Basha Bazooks were sent into the town. Nevertheless, the Turks embarked on a bloodthirsty rampage. They split open the skulls of the children with their sabers and decapitated them outright. Heads littered the streets, and infants were spitted with bayonets and carried about town. The Turks even ripped open the bellies of pregnant women to stab the fetuses. Now you begin to wonder why there's a lot of anti-Turk sentiment around. Villages who sought shelter in their houses were trapped as the Turks broke down the doors and killed everyone inside. Then rampaging soldiers set fire to the houses. Bodies and parts of bodies were thrown in random heaps within the walls of the churchyard, measuring 50 to 75 yards. Some 3,000 bodies were piled 4 foot deep. But most of the 15,000 victims were left where they fell, to rot or be devoured by dogs. Reports of the terrible repression in Bulgaria reached European newspapers, and the outrage helped bring about a creation of the autonomous Bulgarian state in 1878. There you go. So you wonder why Bulgarians and a lot of these, and Armenians and all these people are fed up with the Turks and have an undying hatred of the Turks? Well, you can understand. I hope. In 1876 to 1878, a famine strikes India again. The first monsoon failed to bring seasonal rains in southern India, causing a drought that ruined crops there in 1876. Then in 1877, it failed in the north and brought so much rain to the south that the flooding again ruined the crops there. In the resulting famine, some 5 million people died. Every once in a while, I get a nasty email from an Indian how they're superior to the white race, that these colored folk are superior to the white race. But I keep saying, well, look at what's going on around you. You're still running railroad cars with passengers where the only place to take a crap is through a hole in the bottom of the floor of the train. I wouldn't call that very superior myself, but they never look at that. And why are so many of these Indians coming over here? Mostly males, looking for white women over here, too. And they're getting them, too, because they're getting a lot of engineering jobs and so forth. I have no use for that group of people over there in India. In 1876 to 1879, famine kills millions in China. In 1876, 3 years of severe drought had already taken their toll in the province of China. Crops had failed, the price of food had soared, and people were starving to death. Villages were reduced to eating thistles, weeds, and even bits of wood to stay alive. Women and children were sold into slavery and prostitution for meager sums. Many villages were completely wiped out by starvation. Others were emptied as people fled to other areas in search of food. In winter, some famine victims who had lost their homes sought shelter in enormous crowded underground pits, and many of them died there. Others burned their houses for warmth during the long winter months, then had no shelter at all. That don't sound like a very smart Chinaman. Thievery, mob violence, suicide, cannibalism became commonplace, as hundreds of thousands of people tried desperately to stay alive. The government punished such lawbreakers with mass beheadings or the terrible sorrow cage, a wooden structure in which criminals were abandoned to slowly die of starvation. By August 1879, shortly before the prolonged drought finally ended, some 13 million Chinese had perished as a result of hunger, disease, and predation. Well, that's it for today from The Pessimist Guide to History, but I want to tell you, it can happen again, and it can happen right here in North America. And if you don't think so, then you're a fool. Well, here's another slippery slope, boys and girls. Chicago, nearly 3 years after the I-Team exposed regular attacks on Chicago paramedics, a new city ordinance is finally in the works to protect them and all first responders. Sounds like a good idea in the beginning, doesn't it? But these good ideas tend to get out of hand. Under the proposed ordinance, city hate crimes laws would be expanded to protect police, fire, and EMS crews. Well, that's probably maybe the only way a white heterosexual guy can have any protection. Maybe. Paramedics say the incidents that keep them from doing their jobs and endanger their lives happen roughly once a day. It is so unpredictable, paramedic Brandy Casper said. Six people turned into 12. A mini mob kind of formed and physical violence started, paramedic Larry Kaczmarek said. We had nothing, no warning, paramedic Melanie Howe said. Now, relief is proposed in an expansion of Chicago's hate crime law to include current, former police and fire officers and emergency crews. That former bothers me. It would also include an increase in fines for those who attack first responders, and convicted violators should face up to 6 months in prison. Quote, the wheels of justice move slowly. We're just happy that someone is finally taking this seriously, and we're going to get something done about this because these people are out there risking their lives every day to provide service and render aid, and they should not be attacked while on the performance of their duty, said Thomas Ryan, president of the Chicago Firefighters Union, local number 2. Well, it sounds good on paper, but somehow everything that sounds good on paper usually ends up with a lot of flaws and some people getting away with things that they shouldn't be able to get away with. Now, they started this, I think, down in Texas or down south, Alabama or Mississippi, where they're going to have the hate crime laws cover their cops. But what if you're right and the cop is wrong? It wouldn't make any difference. You're still be charged with a hate crime. The ordinance, sponsored by 6 aldermen, will introduce on the city council floor and comes 2.5 years after the I-team rode with the Chicago Ambulance Squad in Inglewood to get a first look at the dangers lurking around every corner. Well, here again, this is all coming from primarily the black race. All of this kind of stuff, all these kind of repressive laws and what seems like good laws that turn out sometimes to be bad laws are mostly because of black crime. Do you know that? I hope you know that. And so that's another reason why the black race is a plague upon the white race. Yeah, to protect people from these savages, and they are these people in the streets of Chicago. They're savages, so they have to keep constructing more and more laws, which they will try to use on non-savages. I've got a better idea. All you white EMC or EMT people, quit. Get jobs outside of Chicago in smaller towns, whiter areas, and leave the non-whites to their just desserts. That's why I say only black cops should be in the black area, the black ghetto. Only black cops. Keep the whites out. And then when blacks shoot these black criminals in the street or whatever you want to call them, no, they can't complain. A lot of these so-called hate crimes by cops are already being committed by black cops. They don't want to talk about it much in the newspaper. Another Chicago story, but this is for all the big cities of the country. Violent crimes, from homicides and rapes to robberies, have been on the rise in many major U.S. cities, yet experts can't point to a single reason why the jump isn't enough to suggest there's a trend. Have they ever heard of the chaos factor? Still, it is stumping law enforcement officials who are seeking a way to combat the problem. Well, deport about, I don't know how many million Negroes, and you wouldn't have so much of a problem. It's being reported on to local levels, but in my view, it's not getting the attention at the national level it deserves, FBI Director James Comey said recently. We just can't figure it out. I don't know what the answer is, but holy cow, do we have a problem. Well, you don't want to face the problem. That is your problem. You never want to face the race problem, the black race problem and the mestizo race problem. Americans have grown accustomed to low crime rates, since a peak in the 1990s. Boy, I'll tell you. Tell that to some guy who's had his head beat in walking down the street. But law enforcement started seeing a spike last year that has continued unabated. Well, that's because you haven't enforced the situation. What's unusual, however, is that it's not happening everywhere. Chicago and Los Angeles are seeing homicides on the rise, but other places like Miami and Oakland are not. Wow. Chicago, a city long associated with violent crime that plagues its poorer neighborhoods, its black, mestizo-type neighborhoods, saw 6 people fatally shot over Memorial Day weekend and 56 wounded, ending a bloody month and in a bloody year. May's 66 homicides, 19 more than May 2015 and 25 more than May 2014, raised the total number of the year past 240. That's more than 50% higher than last year and puts the city on a pace to easily surpass the 500 homicides it saw in 2012. Perhaps more significant is the number of people who are being shot, well over 1,200 as of Tuesday, which far surpasses the 800 by this time last year. The chaos factor is moving right along, boys and girls. It's moving right along. I like this. Among the many problems facing Chicago, crime tops the list as a grave concern for the city's business community. How about that? Well, you got troubles out in Iowa, depending on whom you listen to. Iowa has or doesn't have a hate crime problem. We think that there are more hate crimes than are being reported. That for whatever reason, the reporting can be inconvenient or difficult to prove. It's certainly something for the state and all of us to pay more attention to. Yeah. A story from the Lee Enterprises Des Moines Bureau said that based on the review of federal records, 2 out of 5 Iowa law enforcement agencies did not file any hate crime reports to the FBI over a 6-year period. That is the 7th highest rate in the nation, according to the Associated Press. And you know you can trust those assholes. In North Iowa, 10 agencies reported no hate crimes over those 6 years. Other communities went anywhere from 2 to 4 years. Mason City and Sierra Gorda County were absent from the list. Not surprising, given to their large population. Well, by God, we got to get out there and get some hate crimes going, man, because they're upset because they haven't had hate crimes. They've got to have more hate crimes. Yeah. We'd all love to think that North Iowa is an idyllic place where people get along pretty well with each other. Well, maybe it is. For the most part, that's true, but numerous disturbances are reported. A fair number are domestic in nature. Others run the gamut. And pardon our skeptical nature, it's hard to believe that at least some would not be classified as a hate crime. Victim advocates and advocacy groups say that that's the case when looking at overall state structure. Of course, you know, these people, these advocates and advocacy groups get money and get funding from various agencies, including the federal government. Of course, it behooves them to have a lot of money in the till. FBI defines a hate crime as a criminal offense against a person or property motivated in whole or part by the offender's bias against a race, religion, disability, sexual orientation, ethnicity, gender, or gender identity, unquote. Wow. Just got to get out there and catch all these hate crimers, man. They're all over the place. You guys aren't doing it. Well, maybe this is why there's a lack of hate crime arrests. Syracuse, New York. Dwight DeLee, a black man, was convicted by a jury of the 2008 hate crime homicide of a transgender woman, Licia Green. He made an anti gay slurs before shooting the victim in a car on Seymour Street. But DeLee's 25-year prison sentence was overturned 2 years ago on a technicality. DeLee has been a free man for the most part since, walking around town looking for another victim. That ended today when DeLee was taken back into custody after surrendering in court based on a warrant from Judge Anthony Olaya. Let's see. DeLee, now 27, was arrested again after being reindicted in Green's death. Defense lawyer Charles Keller confirmed this afternoon. It is not clear if it's being charged as a hate crime this time. Keller was not in court today due to an unexpected emergency, so DeLee's official arraignment was delayed until Wednesday morning. Wow. I'll tell you. Well, how come they don't have more hate crime arrests? Well, they arrest them for hate crime, and then they don't follow through and put them in the clink. You can't win with these people. Well, Staten Island, New York, public advocate Letitia James, you know what color she is, condemned the arson that was committed at broad daylight on Sunday afternoon at the church in Stapleton. Police said no arrests have been made and a description of the suspect is not available, in part because detectives have not been able to obtain surveillance video of the crime. Quote, I am disturbed that St. Paul's Memorial Episcopal Church in Staten Island was firebombed this weekend, unquote, James said in a statement. Thankfully, no one was injured, and the historic landmark church sustained minor damage. Churches are not only holy sanctuaries of prayer, but they are beacons of our community. That's right. You atheists, stay away from those churches. Quit burning those churches down, you atheists. Well, Poland's got a war on verbal aggression and hate crimes. The grouping's proposed legislation was assessed by civil society organizations on Tuesday, along with representatives of circles that often fall victim to verbal aggression and hate crimes. So if you call a non-white or some kind of person of another sex or something out the window of your car, if you call them a nasty name, that's a hate crime. The consultations were attended by activists such as blah, 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 and from the Blah, Blah, Blah Foundation, an NGO helping migrants integrate in Poland. They got enough problem with regular Poles. Now they're bringing them in. New Poles. LGBT rights campaigner Mira blah, 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 blah from the campaign against homophobia. Do you have homophobia? I don't know. If they sit on the other side of the room, probably not. And Joanna blah, 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 and from the Head Stop Project targeting hate speech in Polish society. We can only tell Polish jokes here, can't tell racial jokes. The two chief conclusions, incidentally, the Polish jokes were invented by the Jews. Yes, they were. The two chief conclusions from these talks are unsettling, says blah, 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 blah. Firstly, the level of aggression in public life has risen exponentially in the recent months, which unfortunately translates to a hike in attacks against foreigners and hate speech, blah, blah, blah said. We're clearly facing a rise of neo-fascist movements. The other conclusion is that the anarchistic and terrorist actions in Poland are the result of growing aggression in the political arena, which, blah, blah, blah says, is fueled by the governing Law and Justice Party. Oh. Can't have law and justice. Can't have that. Just a minute here. Wait a minute. How come that? Well, I guess I'll have to stop on that one because it's not coming down. Wait a minute. Let me try it again. Nope. I'll have to forget that one. Anyhow, the Poles are going crazy. Polish jokes are okay, but don't call a homo a homo. You'd be in trouble. Yeah. Well, I hope they got big jails out there in Nebraska, because they're going to stuff them full of all anybody that has a fist fight with a person of another race. Grand Island, Nebraska, a third-degree assault charge against a Grand Island man has been elevated from misdemeanor to a felony because he's accused of using racial slurs against the victim. Well, you see, he shouldn't have said that. He should have thought racial slurs, but he shouldn't made them vocal racial slurs. You got to remember that. If you get in a fight with a non-white, think nasty things, but don't say anything. The 36-year-old man has been charged with third-degree assault, hate crime. He's accused of assaulting another man in the parking lot of Snack Shack the night of May 31st. The two men were engaged in a physical fight over probably a hamburger or something. The charge was elevated to a felony because of the assault was discrimination-based, said Captain Dean Elliott of the Grand Island Police Department. Officers heard the defendant using Hispanic, that's mestizo, racial slurs toward the victim during the fight. So you got to remember that. You think racial slurs in your mind against the victim, and you'll be all right. Maximum penalties in this class of felony are 5 years in prison. A $10,000 fine. I think it's cool. They're going to put thousands of people in prison for these Mickey Mouse things, and they're going to have to feed them. They're going to have to feed them and house them. Where are they going to get the money? Where's the money coming from all of this stuff? It's hilarious. The chaos factor. Well, the Jews are upset and upset. Let's get real, this Jewish guy says here, wrote this article. No matter what happens in November, America will survive. Well, I don't know about that. True, we've had every right to feel incensed that the choice we now face is between a thoroughly corrupt cynic and a reprehensible deranged man-child. But we've soldiered through worse, and we must believe that for every Millard Fillmore, the artful dealmaker who held on to power by signing the Fugitive Slave Act that mandated the return of escaped Negroes and to their masters down south, because they were property, just like my mule or my tractor. There's a Lincoln waiting in the wings, trembling with rage and ready to rise. So another war? America, as poet Langston Hughes put it so well, yeah, right, will be America again. Yeah, sure. America will never be the America again. But he says, but not for Jews. For those of us whose names are now encased in multiple parentheses, the nation will transform this fall, come what may. Clinton or Trump, stinging defeat or close call, divided House or clean partisanship sweep. Politics will change in the ways we cannot even begin to comprehend. But it will spell, in non-trivial ways, the end of a more than half-century-long American Jewish bloom. It was wonderful. It was wonderful. We were so well tweeted. We didn't have any spew, didn't have any, anti-Semitic stuff. Portents are everywhere. Even Steven Spielberg, the wide-eyed bard of America's perpetual optimism, recently admitted he was wrong to believe anti-Judaism was fading. The world, said the father of the Jaws, is full of monsters, but the twilight of the Jewish American dream is not a horror movie. It will not come about by the bloody hands of maniacs. Instead, it creeps up on us in a column of 1,000 tiny statistics, each easy enough to explain away on its own, but none advisable to ignore. The end of Jewish America is everywhere you look. So far, I like this guy. look rightward and you'll see the Republican leadership trying to rationalize away what for Jews ought to be the non-negotiable fact that bigotry must never be tolerated. Well, I'm going to tell you, I've met some of the Jews I've met in my life were the most bigoted people I ever met. And they said nigger all the time, too. No matter its targets or no matter the circumstances. Sure, there's a good case to be made for why the party's smarting elite is right to have fallen in line with Trump. And sure, it's silly to expect any political party to pay for its principles with its life. That's true. But having chosen to embrace their man, the Republicans must stop equivocating and realize that they've no choice but to embrace his throngs as well. Yeah, that means us. Yeah, because that's who the Jewish press is attacking. Where was I? With Trump as its helm, the GOP will no longer be the party of Lincoln or Reagan. Well, thank goodness for that. It will be the party of those who think that keeping the Muslims out is fine. Yeah! Of those who cheer on calls to disqualify a judge because of his mestizo heritage and the fact he belonged to a racist mestizo group called La Raza Unida. Yeah! Of those who gleefully tweet illustrations of gas chambers and quips about ovens. By the way, did you hear about this cigarette ashtray in a Volkswagen? No. It will be a party of Huns led by a hard head. No decent person should join such a party, but the Jews have particularly resonant reasons for staying the hell away. But the problem you have is there's thousands and thousands of them joining up with Trump. And, of course, his close advisors are Jewish and his son married one. You Jews are in it. You don't even want to admit you're in it. Look leftward and things are hardly better. There it's the rise of the planet of the progressives. Look at the college-educated and you'll see that whereas only 12% identified as consistently liberal in 1994, today 47% do, which perhaps helps explain why two-thirds of the Democrats, 18 to 34, support Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, and only a third prefer former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. Young Americans, as surveys and studies unfailingly tell us, are slouching towards a more perfect progressive dogma, and the political constellations they're likely to form will almost certainly be hospitable to Jews. More chaos. This should come as no surprise for progressivism, maybe one of the most mutable terms in American politics. Just what exactly it means changes depending on who's speaking and when and whom. You can say that again. I listen to all these radio stations on the left, too, from time to time, and they're all fighting, struggling. You got the liberals, and you got the progressives. They are different. And then you got the left wing. total chaos. But it's not much of an injustice to say that progressivism, to borrow useful insight from the brilliant Yuval Levin, whoever he was, is powered by the twin and seemingly contradictory engines of consolidation on the one hand and diffusion on the other. Well, I'm glad you said that. Economically, its supporters champion the regulatory powers of the federal government. Well, that's where the money is. While culturally, they advocate increased deference to the sensitivities of marginalized individuals. That's a mouthful. For at least six decades, if not longer, American Jews have traveled more or less in opposite direction. A house divided of kikes cannot stand, championing a culture of consolidation that is a necessary backdrop for blending in while supporting moderately liberal economic policies that focus on individuals and not on collectives. Well, it's not a coincidence that the president, who enjoys the greatest support of American Jews in modern history, LBJ, that's because the president does not give the blacks what they really want. Jobs. I mean, a lot of them do. Let's face it. Don't kid yourself. There's a lot of blacks want jobs because they got to have money to live and buy that Cadillac, baby. LBJ, with a whopping 90% of the Jewish vote, breathed life into Medicare and Medicaid, but also passed a vigorous tax cut for individuals and corporations, believing there were few better ways to encourage spending and stimulate the economy. American Jews, having begun the second half of the 20th century, driven by anxiety that the Goyim will spot and mock their provincial ways, see under Eli the Fanatic or any other early Philip Roth, ended up so thoroughly and uncomfortably assimilated as to have successfully infused many of their idiosyncrasies into the culture at large. Yeah, you've watered yourself down, Jews. You're getting watered out of the picture. That's what they did in Germany, as they assimilated, lots of assimilation. This instinct, this genius for assimilation, this affirmation of an all-American identity that trumps the rougher tribal one, is precisely what progressivism now heatedly rejects. Well, they better, because it's going to go no place. You can see this ideological scuffle, strangely, in the brewing fight over Israel in the upcoming Democrat National Convention, see? You've got to give us what we want. We need more submarines and missiles and atomic bombs over here in this little pissant bandit state of Israel so we can threaten everybody around us. By appointing pollster James Zogby, the professor at Cornell West, to the party's platform drafting committee, Saunders, who earlier this week said he saw no real difference between Clinton's foreign policy and Trump's, wow, is not signaling a commitment to a concrete agenda, but an allegiance to a political mood that singles Israel out for calumny because of how maddeningly ill-suited it is to the progressive gospel. Well, I don't know how you can say that because Israel's all split up anyhow. All split up. And 200 or 300,000 Jews living under the poverty level in Israel. And God didn't do nothing to help them out, neither. Consider, for example, West's 2014 Facebook rant in which he called the Israeli strikes on Gaza a massacre of innocent Palestinians and a crime against humanity, while condemning Hamas rocket attacks as merely politically ineffective. Well, that's true. Those rockets weren't worth the powder they took to put them together. I think out of all those rockets they shot over there, which was a stupid thing to do as far as I'm concerned, I think they only killed one or two Jews. But the Palestinians, they attacked the Palestinian, killed hundreds of them, blew all their houses apart so they're living in the street. That's a whole different situation. It's amazing how these Jews rationalize. You could, of course, chalk the professor's comments up to anti-Semitism, but progressivism offers a more compelling explanation. Oh. Okay. Follow contemporary progressivism to its rational conclusion, as West often does in his writings, and there's no reason why you wouldn't come to see the cohesion nation state exercising its right to self-defense as inherently evil and the terrorist group as a band of righteous, if misinformed, disenfranchised brothers. Even if Clinton is triumphant, Jews should expect this convoluting, toxic logic to grow ever more prominent among the Democrats, as it is among the laborites in Britain. The Democrat Party, too, can no longer be our home. We Jews and kikes got to get out of here, man. We don't belong here, man. Which really is good news. Clowns to the left of us and racists to the right. We American Jews may finally awaken to our 30-year nap and learn again how a community that grapples fiercely with big ideas. We can build new institutions that do more than fret about continuity without questioning what exactly is that we wish to continue. We can set aside the increasingly inane quibbling over minor differences. Well, that's bullshit. You'll never stop doing that. Just read the Israeli papers and read the New York Jewish papers. And instead, focus on imagining a shared future animated by more audacious common goals, like making lots of money. We can, in short, regain the spirit that has propelled us through history and then grew dormant as we became comfortable in the American mainstream. Boy, this guy's delusional. Let's face it, we Jews are outsiders. Well, you got that right. Herein our sorrow, herein our greatness. Imagine what we can do if moved not by the soft tremors of party politics, but by the big jolt of feeling after all these years of politically homeless. There's no point in waiting until November, no matter who wins. The Jews have already lost. It's time now to do what we do best. Shake off the ashes, say a prayer, and rebuild. Well, there you go. What this right wing always talking about the Jews all together, they're solid together, and they're not fighting or anything. And this guy says the Jews have already lost. In other words, they're going to lose in the Democrat Party, they're going to lose in the Republican Party, and it's time to do something else. Yeah, maybe they'll immigrate out. Maybe they'll do Aliyah to Israel and get their time to try to save Netanyahu's kosher ass, which he's about to get handed to him politically. Odin bless chaos, the chaos factor. Incidentally, that real downer article for the Jews was written by Lyle Leibovitz, a senior writer for a Jewish magazine called Tablet. Yeah. I love to read what the Jews say about themselves. I get more out of that than ever I could get out of Stormfront. Or how about this? A literary critic, Adam Kirsch, is reading a page of the Talmud, a day along with Jews around the world. How about that? He says, a Jewish mother runs down the beach screaming, "Help, my son, the doctor's drowning." You probably heard that one before, or else one about two Jewish mothers in Washington Square. Quote, "My son is in medical school. NYU? Question mark. And why not me? Question mark. These are just a few of the jokes Sarah Silverman, that potty-mouthed comedian, has a particularly dark version, playing on the media. The idea what Jewish parents want more than anything else in the world is for their children to become doctors. In fact, Jews have been associated with medicine for a long time. Yeah, right. Killed a lot of people in the process. And saved a few, too. In Christian and Muslim societies, where most avenues for advancement were closed to Jews, being a doctor, and that was the Christian thing, being a doctor was a rare way of getting ahead. Maimonides, for instance, was a doctor at the court of the Muslim ruler Saladin, which is why it is so surprising to discover last week's Daf Yomi reading that the Talmud strongly advises Jews not to become doctors. Quote, "The best of doctors is to Gehenna," unquote. "That's hell," said Rabbi Yehuda. "That is, the best doctors go to hell." And I'm sure there's plenty of them that are operating right now in this country that are destined to go there if there was a hell. This remark comes in the Mishnah of the Kedushim 82a near the end of the Tractate, where the rabbis are discussing the best and worst careers for Jews to pursue. A person should always teach his son to a clean and easy trade, says Rabbi Meyer, and he means clean in a double sense. Some jobs are literally dirty and foul-smelling, such as being a tanner who deals with animal hides and toxic chemicals. The world needs tanners, of course, but if you can avoid doing that job, you should simply because it's so unpleasant. It is impossible for the world to continue without a perfumer and a tanner, Yehudi Nahasi says. But if fortunate is he whose trade is a perfumer, and woe is he whose trade is a tanner. Wow. He follows this up with a rather disturbing corollary. Likewise, it is impossible for the world to exist without males and without females. Yet fortunate is he whose children are males, and woe is he whose children are females. Say what? This saying occurs in the very last page of the Tractate Kedisudium, or whatever, which is the last page of the whole of the Seder Nashim, the group of tractates dealing with the laws about women, marriage, and family. And it's hard not to take Yehuda Nahashivuyiwa insult as kind of a motto for the Talmud's whole attitude towards women. Oh, you mean they don't believe in equality of the women? The world needs women and men need to accommodate. Much of the Jewish law is designed to safeguard the rights and even the privileges of women, but the basic assumption of female inferiority is inescapable. Of course, there are many ways to palliate the Yehudi Nahasi's statement. Well, I say that all that stuff came out of the Talmud, and Christianity grabbed right onto it. That's where you get all the anti-woman stuff in Christianity. For instance, one might argue that he believes boys are preferable because they can do more mitzvot, or because they can study Torah, or because they don't require a dowry. But the point remains that once a culture believes that boys are a blessing and daughters a necessary evil, as many cultures have and still do today, sexism and misogyny are sure to follow. Wow. That's why you should read that book, A Hole in the Sheet, by Orthodox Jews, Orthodox Jew woman. And A Hole in the Sheet shows how insane these Orthodox are. So anyhow, I'm not going to go on with this because it's got a lot of good stuff in it, but it's goes on and on with all this crazy-ass shit about the Talmud. Don't forget George Lincoln Rockwell didn't know about the Jews when he was a commander in the United States Navy. And he came to San Diego when he was getting politically involved in the campaign that General MacArthur was going to maybe enter into it and run for president. I think at the same time Eisenhower did. Well, anyhow, George Lincoln Rockwell came to San Diego, and there were a pair of people down there, and I'm sure I knew them. They didn't use their name. Their name wasn't printed. But they were super-duper on knowing about what the Jews are up to. I knew this man and his wife in their senior years, and He said he was going to get a hall and start getting people in there to support General MacArthur for president. And they said, don't waste your time. Don't waste your time, George. He said, what do you mean? He said, the Jews won't let MacArthur become president. He said, well, what have the Jews got to do with it? That was George Lincoln Rockwell. And they told him about it, and then they pointed him down to the San Diego City Library where you had to have a key to get in through a gate to get into the Talmud books. There's, 23 volumes, or a whole bunch of the Talmud, Babylonian Talmud, but you got to have the librarian let you in and lock you in, or at least it used to be that way. So George Lincoln Rockwell sat down and started reading parts of the Talmud, and he came away knowing a lot about the Jews. So that's the history of how George Lincoln Rockwell turned against the Jews before he'd hit my friend's company and been given the word. He didn't know anything about the Jews. What's the Jews got to do with it? That's like a lot of us have said that in our beginnings. What's the Jews got to do with it? And then somebody has passed it on, and and told us. And that's why it's so important for people to hand off information. No matter how old you are, you can hand off information to the younger people. Just remember, all three of these bastard religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, have spread a lot of anti-white, anti-human stuff down through the years. Some really bad stuff. I mean, if you want to read porno, read the Babylonian Talmud. If you want to read porno, read the Old Testament. If you want to read porno, read the Quran. It's all there.
The real great adventures of me, Tom Terrific, with Mighty Manfred the Wonder Dog. Greatest hero ever. Terrific is the name for me, 'cause I'm so clever. I can be what I wanna be, and if you'd like to see, follow, follow me. If you see a plane on high, a diesel train go roaring by, a bumblebee or a tree, it's me. When there is trouble, I'm there on the double, from Atlantic to Pacific. They know I'm terrific.
I'm Mighty Manfred, the Wonder Dog.